So we want to discuss the Sukhasthikam this week. And we'll begin and read a little bit from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the last chapter. Because in the Antya Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in chapter 20, the last chapter, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is explaining the Sukhasthikam. Very shortly, but still, the first explanations are the explanations of the Lord himself. So we'd like to hear those. In great jubilation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Sarup Damodara and Ramananda Roy, know how from me..." Sorry, I'll start again. In great jubilation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Sarup Damodara and Ramananda Roy, know from me that chanting of the holy name is the most feasible means of salvation in this age of Kali. In this age of Kali, the process of worshipping Krishna is to perform sacrifice by chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who does so is certainly very intelligent, and he attains shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna Varnam Trisa Krishnam Sangam Pankastra Parasadam Yajna Sankirtana Prajer Yayanti Sumedha Saha. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead who constantly sings the names of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. Nama Sankirtan Haita Sarva Nartanasa Sarva Subhadaya Krishna Premira Ulasa. Simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna, one can be freed from all undesirable habits. This is the means of awakening all good fortune and initiating the flow of waves of love for Krishna. Cheto darpana marjanam bhavama davakni nirvapanam sriya kareva chandrika avitaranam vidavadu jivanam anandam buddhivardhanam patipadam punam ritasvadanam sarvatma snapanam param vijayate si Krishna sankirtanam. Let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy names of Lord Krishna, which can cleanse the mirror of the heart and stop the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. That chanting is the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune for all living entities. It is the life and soul of all education. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna expands the blissful ocean of transcendental life. It gives a cooling effect to everyone and enables one to taste full nectar at every step. By performing congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, one can destroy the sinful conditions of material existence, purify the unclean heart, and awaken all varieties of devotional service. The result of chanting is that one awakens his love for Krishna and tastes transcendental bliss. Ultimately, one attains the association of Krishna and engages in his devotional service as if immersing himself in a great ocean of love. So these were like the comments of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on this verse. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, of course, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was a very great scholar. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never wrote any literatures, but only these eight verses. So within these eight verses, the entire process of devotional service can be found from the very beginning stages to the topmost stages. So it is said that devotional service can be divided into three aspects, namely sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Or Sambandha means to make the connection with the Supreme Lord. Abhideya means the process of actually becoming purified, and Prayojana means the goal of developing love of God for the Supreme Lord. So to make the connection, then to follow the process, and then to attain the goal, love of God. So these are all found within the success to come. There are commentaries on the success to come by various acharyas, and we will read some of the comments of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and also maybe some points of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, or Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, begins to comment on the first words of this verse. He says this verse can be divided up in seven sections, which each deal with a different aspect of what can be attained through this chanting. And the first point that is made is Cheto Darpana Marjanam, which means that this chanting cleanses the mirror of the heart. Chanting Lord Krishna's name cleanses the mirror of the conditioned soul's polluted heart, which is wholly covered by three contaminations, namely material desire, the enjoying spirit, and ungodly atheistic activities. The most effective process to cleanse the jiva's heart of all these impurities is chanting Lord Krishna's name. These treacherous contaminations cover the mirror of consciousness and cause the jiva to reject his true nature. Krishna's name alone can free the consciousness of these aberrations. Thus, by constantly chanting, taking complete shelter of the holy name, the jiva gradually perceives the reflection of his original form as the servant of Lord Krishna in the mirror of his consciousness. It's very nice that the consciousness is described as a mirror. Lord Chaitanya explains that, he said, without the use of metaphor, one can never understand the absolute truth. So metaphor means we are using one thing to indicate another. We are describing how Cheto Darpanam, the heart, is like a mirror. In reality, the heart's not a mirror, right? Not in the literal sense. But yet, the heart has many similarities to a mirror. So this concept of similarity is very important, because in understanding spiritual subject matter, we should understand that everything is pervaded with the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, by understanding one thing, one can understand another. Because within everything there is a connection. And in this way we find that we are not at all on our own and just alone with our own mind, right? Like the impersonal inclination is, or the Buddhist inclination is, to simply indulge in one's own mind and to cut oneself off from the environment and the world. But rather we see how we have an intimate relationship with everything and anything, because within everything is the same nature that we have. Therefore, we are meant to have relationships with the entire creation of the Supreme Lord. And we are naturally part of the entire creation of the Supreme Lord. So that is one point that is interesting and important, because in this way a devotee is not meant to cut himself off from the world, but rather a devotee is very much meant to relate to the world and to appreciate the world in its fullness, not just seeing the beauty of things, but also seeing the source of the beauty of things. Just like we are seeing how Srila Prabhupada was, in the early days, he was staying in New York City and he was preaching. And in New York City, the buildings are so high that many times you can't even see the sky. All you see is just buildings. So, Srila Prabhupada organized an excursion to a country ashram of one Indian yoga teacher. And they were all there, Prabhupada and his disciples. And, wow, the disciples were very, very impressed by the beauty of nature. They said, such extraordinary beauty we have rarely seen. They said that in the morning when the sun was rising, the red in the sky, it was as if an artist had painted it. And Prabhupada said, yes, it is very nice. But still, we are more concerned with the beauty of He who is the source of all this than with the beauty of all these things themselves. So a devotee is always seeing everything in connection with the Supreme Lord. He has that long-range vision. But when the heart is covered by material contamination, then one is not able to have that long-range vision, and one cannot see the Lord behind everything. One can see the things, but not their real meaning. One can see the beauty in this world, without a doubt, but one cannot understand the real purpose of that beauty and how that beauty is really properly used. Just like I was flying in India and I looked at the magazine in the pocket, and there was a description given of how in one village in Madhya Pradesh they are making very special saris, hand woven with real gold inside. And one sari, the cheapest ones are 40,000 rupees, and the more expensive one, 200,000, 300,000. So very intricate, nice designs. So I thought, well, interesting, maybe something for the deities, right? Something to remember. Very beautiful, real gold. They make threads, very fine threads of real gold, and they weave that in, and very intricate designs. Nice designs, everything. Beautiful. But for what purpose? All being used for decorating mundane personalities, royalty, like that. Enjoying material life. So, what a waste. All such talents and all such opulence are meant to be used for the Supreme Lord. So when the dust is covering the heart, then the fundamental mistake is there, that we think that we are the enjoyer. So as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out, it is the enjoying spirit that is the problem. The enjoying spirit, that we think that, yes, everything is meant for my enjoyment. In other words, we think that we are Purusha. Purusha means the enjoyer and the controller. But we are never to be the enjoyer. We are meant to be enjoyed. And we are meant to contribute to the enjoyment of the Supreme Lord and use everything for the enjoyment of the Supreme Lord. And as soon as we do so, suddenly everything in life becomes very meaningful. When such opulent, beautiful cloth, like I was just describing, saris of hundreds and thousands of rupees with real gold in the designs, very, very intricately woven, such cloth is obviously rightly used when it is for the pleasure of the Lord, for the glorification of the Lord. Because He is the most glorious. Everyone else has some imperfection. We're seeing that in the European royalty, that the kings were wearing these big, big wigs, right? We still call important people big wigs, right? Because of that, right? Just to look more impressive. Right? And then lots of powder to cover things up, to look more impressive, and then the costume, etc., to masquerade the imperfections. But it is mentioned that whatever beauty is used on the body of Krishna in terms of jewelry or in terms of clothing, that the beauty of those ornaments or the beauty of that clothing is increased by Krishna wearing it. Right? So rather than that the beauty of Krishna becomes increased by the jewels, the beauty of the jewel becomes increased by Krishna, because Krishna is more beautiful than the jewel. See, this is the nature of the Supreme Lord. So Krishna consciousness, or the relationship with the Supreme Lord, is very refined. Therefore, the process of purifying the heart is an ongoing process. It is a process where gradually we become more and more aware of how refined the Lord is. The Lord will not reward his devotee any material benefits as long as that devotee is attached to the material benefits. It is said that another problem that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur identified was material desires. So we have so many desires to enjoy different things in this world. So these will be denied to the devotee as long as such desire is there. Krishna will then not give us so many material facilities. So only when we are actually engaging everything in the service of the Lord without having personal attachment will Krishna grant us material opulence, if he desires so. Sometimes he may desire that a devotee lives in very simple conditions, simply to show that his devotee is not at all dependent on any material arrangement, and therefore has no material desire. The real understanding, the real understanding is that actually the only thing relevant is the spiritual world. The spiritual world is the world where everything is wonderful. The spiritual world is where everything is manifest fully. Only in the spiritual world is it possible to fully express one's desire to serve Krishna. In the material world, everything is very limited. In the material world, we have to, what Srila Prabhupada calls, make the best use of a bad bargain. Here we are with very limited material bodies, very limited intelligence, very limited strength, very little capacity to do anything. Here, we somehow or other scrape something together, right, and make it into the form of an offering and say, Krishna, please accept this. I know it's quite meager, but it's the best I can do. I know it's not perfect, right? That is the way it is. We cannot ever offer anything perfect to the Supreme Lord, because we are not perfect. And nothing that we can find in this world is perfect. It doesn't exist. So we just make some offering to Krishna as good as we can. But the spiritual world is the world of perfection. So that's the natural situation. And the difference between a spiritual body and a material body is inconceivable. The spiritual body is fully blissful, is free from all fear. The spiritual body is fully conscious. Everything is a wonderful, inspiring experience from moment to moment, only increasing more and more and more. Unlike the dull existence that we have in the material world, where we are being covered by a body which is limited in energy, which has so much suffering built into it, and where we have to struggle. The normal existence in material life is struggle. That is the nature of our life. We're used to it. It's become our second nature, and we think, sometimes we forget that material life is struggle. We think, no, it's not struggle at all. I'm enjoying. But actually, in order to enjoy, one also has to struggle. Constant struggle. But we take it natural. No, this is nice. But in the spiritual world, there is no struggle at all. There is no friction. No, like here, you have to walk up the mountain. And after a little while, you feel it, right? Here, we drive, and after some while, you feel your neck or your back, right? Anything, right? It's struggle. But in the spiritual world, everything is nice, everything is supportive, everything is favorable. So I'm spending all this time to sketch the difference between spiritual existence and material existence, to make a point. And the point I want to make is that here in the material world, we have limited capacity. And therefore, the transcendentalists, the pure devotee, is not interested in the material world. He has no desire to be in the material world. However, he's also not disgusted. He's also not turning away from the material world and saying, this is all Maya, I have to get out of this place. No, he is also seeing how he can engage the material energy into the service of the Lord and spiritualize it in that way, and therefore he's satisfied in the material world. It's not that he needs to get out of the material world. He can stay in the material world. But at the same time, he also sees that the material energy in itself is abnormal, and is actually unwanted. It is unwanted, the material energy in itself. We're speaking about the dust on the mirror. So the dust are the anarthas, the unwanted material contamination, the anarthas. So Srila Prabhupada said, on one occasion he said, the body is an anartha. The whole material body is an anartha. It is an unwanted thing, actually. It is a stumbling block. It is a lump of matter which has somehow or other captured the soul, and that lump of matter is just bringing us down. It is weighing us down. Now, we can somehow or other engage that lump of matter in the service of the Lord, and in that way we can use it. But in itself, it is actually an anartha, an unwanted object, which is a stumbling block. So the chanting of the Holy Name will gradually diminish our interest in anything in the material world. Right? but not in a way that it brings some sadness with it. Not in a way where we feel, it's now destroying my whole material life. No, it is rather simultaneously giving us more and more insight about the spiritual reality. Srila Prabhupada, in commenting on this verse, Cheto Darpanam Marjanam, or not Darpanam, Darpana Marjanam, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, it's very tempting to say Darpanam Marjanam, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, Srila Prabhupada is commenting that the heart is like a mirror, or in more modern terms, Prabhupada said the heart is like a camera. The heart is like a camera taking photos. He said, taking many photos. And all these photos we're keeping there in the heart. Right? So now, of course, in even more modern terms, we say digital camera. Right? The heart is like a digital camera, and we keep it all on the heart disk. On the heart disk. Right? We can speak of the heart disk. And there we are storing all the data and keep them, and we look at them again and again after all the pictures that we've made, and they preoccupy our consciousness. So all these pictures, they take over our consciousness. Prabhupada said, yes, psychologists, they know this thing. Right? It is a fact. So this is what's going on. But in the present stage, we do not have the proper lenses to take the pictures of Krishna. For that, one requires a more refined lens. Just as a mirror that has some dust on it, one can still see something, but you will not get a clear picture. So in the same way, our present sense of perception is gross. If I jump ahead in the Shikshastakam, then in the final verses, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing the relationship that exists between the Lord and His pure devotees, and in particular in relationship between him and the topmost devotees, the gopis, and in particular of all devotees, that which exists between the Lord and Srimati Radharani, the topmost devotee of the Lord. So it is said, Asli Shiva Padaratam Pinastamam Madarsanam Mamatam Kuru Tiva Yatava Vidatata Lampatoma Prananatu Epanavara. It is explained that the Lord can do anything and everything, and He can be present before the devotee if He desires so, and He can. So, and the Lord is personally having intimate dealings with His devotees. And we're seeing that Krishna is actively a participant in the relationship between with a devotee. In most religious concepts of the world, there is a concept of that one has to give up sinful behavior. Cheto darpanam marjanam. That part you can recognize in any religion, religious process in the world, that there's a need to give up sinful activities and a need for purification. Right? Every tradition is doing that. So with Cheto Darpanam, with cleansing the mirror of the heart, it doesn't seem that Krishna consciousness is so unique. But since I took a little preview of the final conclusion in the Shikshastikam, we are seeing there that the Lord Himself is very actively involved in an active relationship with the devotee. So that is unique. We don't see that. Usually we see, okay, if there's pious behavior, there's reward, then there's blessing, there may be even heaven or whatever may be, or some other description of an eternal world where one may eternally enjoy. And all that we also find in spiritual, in Krishna consciousness. But we see that beyond, the Lord, beyond giving these kind of rewards, is very intimately and actively involved in the life of the devotee. And not only kind of as a rewarding agent, but rather the Lord is personally taking initiatives. He's taking initiatives to interfere in the life of the devotee. Even when the devotee didn't do anything at all, the Lord will act in the life of his devotee and will make all kinds of arrangements. So this is certainly a very unique feature which we do not find described like that very much. Oh yeah, sometimes you see the Lord is doing this, is doing that, but we don't see that. We see the Lord is taking some initiative, but that's usually more on the platform of mankind, right? That he, but never that the Lord is constantly taking initiatives in the life of every single devotee. So this is going on, but we cannot perceive this. It's already happening now, but we cannot perceive. The Lord, as soon as one becomes a devotee, as soon as one chants Hare Krishna, one is accepted as a devotee. And from that time on, the Lord takes direct initiatives in our life. But as we are becoming more purified, these initiatives are increasing. So it's not only that our perception of the Lord is increasing, but also the relationship with the Lord is increasing. Anyway, the first part of the Shikshastikam is dealing with this aspect of the mirror. Another aspect of the mirror is it shows our dependence. The mirror or the camera, it shows our dependence. It shows that we are always dependent on something external, something beyond ourselves for happiness. That's our constitutional position. We cannot be happy within ourselves. Just with ourselves, we cannot be happy. It's not possible. We are always dependent for happiness on an external factor, because by nature we are a mirror. But as long as we make that happiness dependent on the external things of this world, then we make a mistake. As soon as we make that happiness, as we realize that it's dependent on the Supreme Lord, then it will be there. So that's another important aspect of this mirror analogy. Then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta continues with the second point, which is that the Lord protects the devotee from material existence. That is in the following words, Bhava Maha Devakni Nirvapanam. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, this material existence only appears to be sweet and pleasurable, but in reality it is like a fire, and in the depths of a forest, which can sometimes burn the entire forest to ashes. Non-devotees who have no faith in Lord Krishna have to constantly tolerate the soaring, burning pain of this forest fire of material existence. On the other hand, when Lord Krishna's name is perfectly chanted, the devotees are protected from these scorching flames, even though they are in the midst of the forest of the material world. Anyway, so the first half of the verse is describing the removal of all the material affliction, the removal of the burning forest fire of material existence is burning in different ways. In one sense, it burns us with desires that are never fulfilled. So these unfulfilled desires, they burn. It also gives us the suffering that we are experience after we chase after these desires and we get caught up in all kinds of problems instead of happiness, right? And that also burns. It also burns with the frustration that we are experiencing, the mental agony of just the emptiness of not being satisfied. We may not experience so many problems from our material pursuits and endeavors, but it may just feel totally empty, and we'll get depressed, and that also burns. So in this way, there are different ways that material life burns. Like here, life is very comfortable. I was just in Africa, and in South Africa, where there are big contrasts in society. The contrasts are inconceivable. So I was taking a japa walk in Pretoria through a street with mansions, you know. This house would just be big enough for the garage, you know. Right? Something like that. These mansions were inconceivable, so big, right? With huge gardens and driveways, very, very big and opulent. And then only a few kilometers away, one sees the people living in tin sheds, very tiny little tin sheds, something the size where we would keep the garden tools, you know, nothing bigger than that. And a family is living in there. Right? Yeah. Some family members may sleep in the old broken car that stands in front of the door, the car rack. That's probably an extension, right? Or it's the room for the guests, you know, the visitors, right? Can stay there in the old car. So the contrast that one can see are very big, and it's not surprising that in the hearts of those who you see, some of the people who live in these little huts, you see them walking in the streets of these big mansions, right? You see them walking in these streets, and there are big high walls with lots of electric fences on top, and spikes and razor blade wire, and big monster dogs inside, etc. One can only imagine what burns in the hearts of these people that walk in the streets. Yeah. Due to the contrasts. So there are so many different types of burning sensations in the material world. So the chanting takes all that away. The chanting can take the frustration away of what is lacking. It can take away the acute suffering of living in very simple conditions. It can take away the sense of envy when we are seeing the great opulence that someone else may have, whereas we are experiencing hardships. All that is disappearing because it's very simple. The chanting solves all questions. It is said that a devotee knows the answers to all questions because he sees Krishna in all situations. And whenever one sees Krishna, then everything is brought to its proper perspective. Suddenly, if we see Krishna, then everything else that we see, we can immediately see if it's used properly or if it's misused, if it makes sense, right, or if it's nonsense, right, if it is right or if it's wrong. Everything becomes clear as soon as there's Krishna. That is the nature. Therefore, a devotee knows the answers to all questions because he measures everything in relation to Krishna. And in this way, he understands the proper purpose of anything and everything. So this is what is the result of chanting, is that we will know the proper position of anyone, of anything in this world. What is important, what is not important. Without chanting Hare Krishna, it's very, very confusing, right? Because some things look very important. Some people look very important. They speak very important. Everyone says they're very important. It must be very important, right? If everybody believes it. Like that, it is so easy to become bewildered. But Krishna consciousness, being conscious of Krishna, see, we see immediately what is important, what is not important. Like the war, it's not very important if it's put next to Krishna. Yeah. Suddenly, it's reduced in size and say, anyway, because ultimately, whether there are wars in this world, that may be, and people may die, and that may be, but then that's only the body. The soul does not die. So if a person had a relationship with Krishna, even if he dies in the war, he'll attain an auspicious destination. And if a person had no relationship with Krishna, then he's suffering now already, and he'll suffer more. And that's what's going on. That the atheists are now engaging in punishing one another for all their sinful activities. That's really what's happening. It's been pretty much... I'm opening up the floor with an introduction of the Shikshastikam to kind of show a little bit of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu intends to explain here in his prayer, and how the process of Krishna consciousness works. There's a lot more that can be said. One can analyze these verses in a very technical way, but then it would take also longer. We need much more time. You could bring out the blackboard, you could write many things down, and everyone could be penning away. If you want a more technical explanation of the success to come, buy this little book. It's available, it can be ordered from the BLS at Radhadesh, and it's not very expensive, and it's good. I mean, personally, I feel it's a must. I can advertise it. Because there we find a very systematic analysis of the Shikshastikam. I don't intend to do that. I intend to capture the mood more of the Shikshastikam and take some highlights out of there. And I also would like to hear from you, because all of us are living with the Shikshastikam. Shikshastikam is a prayer, these are 8 prayers. Every devotee is supposed to learn these prayers, understand them, meditate on them. They are more than just some prayers. They are very much at the foundation of our spiritual life, and we are meant to take shelter of them, and they are meant to be like guiding beacons in our spiritual life, just as I'm full of flying impressions because I've been in planes a lot in the last 48 hours. And I don't know how many hours in planes, but most of the last 48 hours was in planes. So I'm still seeing the picture of flying over the Mediterranean, where all the beacons were placed out right in the middle. They have these big light ships, right, which were like very bright in the middle, exactly in the middle. So in the same way, these verses are meant to guide us. So these are the kind of verses one regularly recites, one learns, one hangs on the wall with a frame around it in the house. Right? That's like as a meditation. This is so Shikshastikam is meant to be an ongoing meditation. So I'd like to invite some feedback from all of you, either in the form of questions or in the form of some realization that you have about the Shikshastikam yourself, or whatever you have read, or a response to what I've said so far. I'd like to spend maybe 15 minutes with that and then close up. It's all open to you. Any realizations about this verse? Of course, this verse is also can also be understood in a collective sense, how it is changing the whole world, and how everyone, it is said, let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna. The translation here is a little different in the Chaitanya Charitamrita than the one that we often have learned and often have recited in the mornings. This one is more literal to the actual text, and in that way it's very nice. For example, we are chanting, the translation that is commonly recited is, all glories to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of repeated birth and death. It spreads the rays of the benediction moon. So sometimes you may wonder, what's the rays of the benediction moon? What does that mean? So, actually, the rays of the benediction moon, I'll clarify that. Here in this verse, it is said in the second line, Sreya kaireva chandrika vidaranam vidavadu jivanam. So, that is sometimes translated as, it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. But actually, if we're looking more carefully at the text, then it says that Shreya is good fortune, and Kairava actually refers to the white lotus. Chandrika is the moonshine. So it is said that the moon is spreading the white lotus of good fortune. Right. So that is kind of paraphrased as the benediction moon. It is said that the white lotus also is flourishing at night. Right. Somehow or other, the white lotus stays closed in the day, and during the night when the moon is there, then the leaves are opening up. So when the night is there, then in the midst of that, of the darkness of that night, the white lotus is blooming. Right? It's blooming up in the moonlight. So the Sankirtan movement in the darkness of Kali Yuga is blooming up and is flourishing and is spreading its benedictions everywhere. So that is actually the meaning of that sentence. It spreads the benediction moon. So that's technical point, but you know, many of us may not have been aware of the actual meaning of
benediction moon. And I thought, well, maybe it means Lord Chaitanya, who's the moon, and this, that. And in one sense, it is Lord Chaitanya who is the moon. But in the particular text, it is referring to this lotus. If we think it's Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda is acting like the moon, that is also mentioned in the scriptures, and it's true. They are cooling down the burning, blazing material forest fire. So in that sense, it is an extended meaning, but the direct meaning is actually referring to this Kairava, to this lotus. All right, I gave you 5 minutes to kind of think of a question. In the first verse. You're talking about Nam. You mean to say the particular Sanskrit forms, right? I don't think that it means Nam, although Marjanam, Nirvapanam, Jivanam, but one could, of course, see the hidden Nam, the word Nam in there, to remind us of Nam. And maybe it is, right? Maybe in code form it's in there, but I've never heard of that explanation. So that would be an extended understanding of the verse. Sanskrit is like that, right? That there are many forms that end like that. So this is a Sanskrit construction. Although the verse is in Bengali, Bengali in the elevated form is having a lot of Sanskrit. So this verse is very much Sanskrit based. But, the only real Nam that I see is in the word Sankirtanam. There, Kirtanam, there actually you're speaking about Nam. But otherwise, these are just, I think, I would take it as just Sanskrit conjugation. Any other questions? Yeah. In the temples, yeah. Oh, yeah. In Australia, they do it every day, if you consider that the West. Yeah. I don't know where the West begins and where the West ends, you know. Depends from where you start. But Australia is generally counted as part of the West, and it's caught the best of the West and the worst of the West, like everywhere else. Right? There it is chanted every day in the temples. Not as part of the morning program. Not that I've heard of. But at times, Srila Prabhupada chanted it. But it is nice to do so. Of course, we can add so many prayers to the morning program, and that makes it difficult to have any time left to chant japa and to go out of the door in time and to interact with the world. So therefore, for practical reasons, we don't do. And in India, time. Ooh, so much time, man, no problem. Yes, no problem. What time we're meeting? After breakfast, right? Here, it would be like 10 o'clock, you know, and if you're 10:05, somebody's already like, you know, waiting, like, what's going on, you know, right? And if 10:10, it's like, you know, shoo, 10:15, right? It's like 15 minutes late. In India, you know, like, if it's 10, if you come at 11, it's still all right. And you find that you're the first one, right? Nobody else is there yet. And they come at 12, right? So, you know, it's like, they said the Rath Yatra, they had a little Rath Yatra in Mayapur during the festival. They said it was 10, you know. So I calculated, well, it's going to start. At 12, you're going to you have a look, you know. Don't even try and have a look before 12. Because, but it didn't start until 1, you know. But it was fun after that. So that's just India. So they have lots of time for these things, which is nice. But to every day recite the success to come is very nice. So if you do that, that's a very good thing. Just before darshan, you do it. Like that. Nice. Good habit. And if the temple, yeah. In Australia, they do it like after the morning program, when it's all over. Like here, after the morning class, you take darshan of the deities, right? That's what you usually do, and then you wait 10 more minutes before they bring in prasadam, isn't it? That's the Zurich pastime. At least that's what I remember, and I saw it this morning also. So there's always that 10 minutes after class where everyone stands to take darshan. So in Australia, what they then that's when they chant the suksastika. They use those 10 minutes for the suksastika. So who knows? It might blow over from Australia to Zurich. Who knows? If there's some enthusiastic devotees. It's very nice if we know these verses very, very well. Because like I was saying early on, learning a verse is not just for preaching. We're learning the verse for ourselves so that we can take shelter of it. That verse is with us. And it's like a key. It's a key that you can apply to a situation. And it helps you to see that situation in the proper perspective. So these suksastikam prayers, they help us very much to see things in perspective. They're like a key to deal with reality. Any other question? Yes.
Recently, when I came back from Ramadesh, Bhakti Shastri class, I was very amazed how there is a big change, a big difference between those who are so inclined to learn the philosophy of Srila Prabhupada and those who are not yet, or who have more inclined to just practice devotional service on the base of jhana or karma or whatever is easy to do without faith based on the shastras. So my point is that we should tolerate it, and without improvement, shall we have improvement with tolerance also?
Yeah, it is very nice to have a Brahminical culture. The Brahmins, they are not becoming so caught up in the passion that is predominating the world. The whole world is so much predominated by passion. And because of passion, we become so busy with all the things that we see and that we hear and that we know and that we have to do and that are done to us and that are not done to us and like that, and that are supposed to be done to us and that we would like to be done to us and that we wouldn't like to be done to us and that we will never forgive them for doing to us. And all these things are preoccupying our minds so much due to passion that it is not possible to cultivate the study of the scriptures. The Brahmanas are not so caught up in that passion, and they withdraw from the world, from the passionate affairs of the world. You say, anyway, let it be. The material world will never be perfect, and we just have to tolerate and like that. And then, when they are withdrawn from being involved with all these passionate affairs, can they be in the mode of goodness? And then it is possible to have a culture of studying scriptures and being and thinking about these things, and that will help us very much. It will give us. See, philosophy is very important for different reasons. One is, it's easy to serve Krishna when it rains nectar. It's like generally no one, many people, or not many, but sometimes somebody says, it's too much. It's too much living in the temple. I can't handle it anymore. I'm moving out. Right? I'm leaving. I quit. It happens. Right? That somebody says, no, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to live on my own. But nobody does that in the middle of a big feast. Right? You know how here in Zurich they serve it all out and everything is set up really nicely right at the tables, the best preparations. Nobody leaves the temple in the middle of a feast, no matter how difficult it is, isn't it? Yeah, it would. Who would do that? Yeah. The point is this: is that in the middle of the feast, you don't need the philosophy; you have the feast. But at the times when it's difficult, then you need the philosophy, right? Because then the philosophy can help us and can say, "Yeah," because the philosophy looks deeper. So the mind may say, oh boy, it's too much living in this temple, right? Living in this temple, the conditions are just unbearable. And you don't know what it's like, you know. It looks beautiful, but, you know, unbearable, right? So, well, fine. Someone may have that realization, right? It happens. Now, that person may find a better material situation. It may be possible to find a situation that's materially better than this temple. It could be. But one cannot find a situation that is spiritually better than this temple. So that's where the philosophy comes in. See, philosophy says, okay, you find a better material situation, but what about the spiritual situation? So therefore the philosophy will save us at the time of difficulty, at the time of doubt, at the time of stress, at the time of fear, at the time of pain, at the time of suffering, at the time of all difficulties in different forms, then philosophy is what will save us. So therefore we need philosophy very much. So that's one aspect of philosophy. Another aspect of philosophy is that it will broaden our horizons and make us understand so much more what Krishna consciousness is and what the goal is of Krishna consciousness, that it increases our expectations many times, our enthusiasm many times, and therefore it's also very important that we are hearing philosophy to properly understand what we are actually after. What is Krishna consciousness? Without philosophy, we'll never know. And all along, I thought that Krishna consciousness was about ecstasy in the Sunday feast. I thought that was it. That was the peak of the whole thing. Right? Okay. Ever since I've learned these sikshastika prayers, I understood that there's a whole deeper reality to Krishna consciousness. So like that. Philosophy is very valuable. And we should increase a culture of learning. It's like in some temples they have a study group, a Bhagavatam study group, and the devotees, they volunteer, they do that on their own. You know, these kind of things are nice.
the Sikshastakam reciting group. Okay, any other?
Yeah. My point is that normally here the Sikshastakam, the last few shlokas are spoken by Srimati Radharani. But my point is that also the scripture, that actually every shloka is spoken by Radharani. We heard about Krishna and what is the relation of Radharani?
Well, it is said that Lord Chaitanya, he is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. I just said that one time Krishna was feeling that separation from, he could not understand the depth of her feelings, of Srimati Radharani's feelings, and therefore he desired to come in the mood of Srimati Radharani, and that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is meant that especially in these last verses, Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of Srimati Radharani. In another sense, one can recognize something of that mood in all these verses. It is said, there's a division made by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary, and he's making a division in terms of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, and Prayojana especially deals with the mood of Srimati Radharani. I have somewhere a paper, I left it upstairs, which shows a table, and it shows how in all these verses these three elements are present actually. So Prayojana is there. So in that sense, the mood of Srimati Radharani is there in all the verses. But it's not so important to try and understand the success to come in that way. Some people think that that's like, now you're going to the real, deeper, esoteric meanings. But actually, those are secondary issues, very secondary. Primary is to understand the dust has to be removed from the heart. Okay, I think it is 9 o'clock, so time to stop. Thank you very much. And